This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, welcome to Breaking Bread, the show where we explore food through culture, conversations, and a whole lot of curiosity. I'm your host, Lo Yijun, a food writer and recipe developer from the Gin & Tonic blog. Every week on this show, we explore a particular dish, ingredient, or culinary story, and I bring in some food friends and experts to feed our bellies and minds. Today, we are talking about tempeh. If you live in Malaysia, Indonesia, or Singapore, you should be pretty familiar with tempeh. We have tempeh with sambal and ikan bilis mixed into curries and stews, and sometimes even grill it to make tempeh satays. But the raw product itself, the actual tempeh, is a product made from soybeans fermented with quite a specific fungus under certain conditions. And though tempeh originated from Java in Indonesia, it has spread to its neighboring countries and have infiltrated many Southeast Asian cuisines too. And in the past decade or two especially, with the rise of meat substitutes and more people subscribing to plant-based diets, tempeh has gone worldwide, appearing in greengrocers, specialty shops, and even restaurant menus all across the world. And to be honest, though I've eaten tempeh before and even cooked with it a couple of times, I have little clue as to actually how it's made. So to tell us all about tempeh and the tempeh making process, we have the founder of a tiny tempeh business based in Singapore. It's Azimin Saini from Tempeh Culture. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jun. Nice. Thanks for having me here.
Hey, no problem. So, yeah, just start off by telling me a bit about your story and how you ended up setting up Tempeh Culture.
Yeah, so basically, I've eaten tempeh all my life, you know, since I was young. It's something my grandmother made. Basically, my family, we are of Javanese heritage. We moved over to Singapore. Well, my great-great-grandparents moved over to Singapore in about the 1800s. And so tempeh is pretty much part of my cultural heritage. About a year or so ago, we stopped having tempeh at home because my grandmother is no longer with us. But I decided to maybe revive the family recipe, at first just for my family. And then a couple of friends said that it's good enough that maybe I should, you know, go to market with it. And so here we are.
Mm. And what's this? What's so special about the family recipe that you inherited?
Yeah, so basically everything is done by us. So the starter, for instance, is I produce my own starter, which is really important. Also, in terms of the techniques and very, very minute details, that makes all the difference, basically. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, actually, let's just go through how tempeh is made and what is it actually specifically?
Yeah. Okay, so tempeh is basically a twice fermented soy product. It's really high in protein. And when I say it's twice fermented, I mean that there are two different stages of fermentation. One is to create an acidic environment for the mold to grow by soaking the beans. And that is a process of fermentation where the soak water becomes acidic. That creates the environment for the spores to thrive, basically. So that's a first ferment. And then the second ferment is when I introduce the spores, and then that's when it takes off and it grows. So the white parts you see surrounding the soybeans are actually a type of fungus, which doesn't sound very sexy to the average diner, but really, I mean, it's all about breaking down the proteins and making it more bioavailable for the human body to digest.
Mm. So you've been running this business for 1 year, one and a half, would you say?
A little bit less than that. Well, the idea first started about 2 years ago. And then I was experimenting with recipes that, you know when my grandmother used to make tempeh, it's just 3 pieces. So that's like a really tiny amount.
Mm.
So if I were to make more, like maybe each time I make like maybe 10 kilos or even 20 kilos, I needed to make a recipe that was scalable without reducing flavor or the quality.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of R&D on my part. And also because tempeh is a very, very, very delicate item. For instance, like the temperature must be a certain range, the humidity has to be a certain range. So I went through about a year of R&D where I had to figure out the optimum humidity levels and all these things. So but I launched proper, started taking orders about December, quietly first, and then, but now it's really it's taken off in quite a big way.
Mm. And you're supplying to restaurants and...
Well, I'm in talks. I'm in talks of supplying. It all depends on how that's going to go and my production volume. But yeah, there are plans.
Mm. I think when it comes to a lot of these traditional ingredients, especially in here in Malaysia, right? There's usually a lot of pushback from the community, from society, when people try to sexify or modernize what is thought of as traditional, right? Have you felt a lot of pushback in Singapore?
Not at all, actually. If anything, Singaporeans have been very open-minded to what I do. Basically, my customers fall into two camps. They're the first one who create tempeh into traditional recipes, but they are also looking to reduce, say, non-GMO products in their lives. Because I make tempeh using organic soybeans, and then so mine is a solution for them. Mm. Like they like maybe, you know, sambal tempeh or something, and then they realize that this product is better for them. Mm-hmm. They try it out, they realize it tastes much better than whatever's on the market, and then they're sold. Mm. So the second base of customers I have are people who are on plant-based diets. They are often the ones who buy tempeh and like do all sort of funky things to it. not necessarily bad things. Not necessarily bad things, but yeah, you know, things like burgers or stuff into pitas. Things like that. There has been no pushback. I have had people who tell me it's really expensive. It is 7 times more expensive than what's on the market.
Right.
But the process that everything's done by hand. Mm. So, you know, nothing is done by machines. There are no shortcuts and I don't use any plastic. But, you know, if I were to use machines and plastic, then that would definitely bring down the cost of my production. But yes, the only pushback I have is that maybe it's too expensive. But once they try it, they buy one, they try it, and then they realize that it's a really quality product and they're pretty much sold.
Mm. And you say your tempeh, like people usually find it tastier or better than what's sold in the market. Why is that?
Well, typically what people tell me is that it's creamier and a little bit more umami.
Oh, and, okay.
Yeah, the fact is, the thing about tempeh in Singapore is that it is not as easy to find as you would think it is. If you were to go to a wet market or to, you know, one of those smaller markets in the outskirts, you can find something. Often it is not a product that is as thoughtfully made as it can be. But if you go to upscale grocers, you can't find anything like that. The only plant-based protein that's not made with, you know, a million additives, like certain brands from the US, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
There's none of that in Singapore. So that's where I thought maybe, hey, if my grandmother can make this out of her own little kampong kitchen, you know, what does that mean about what it can do for our diets, right? If it is a traditional food item and it's lasted through centuries, that means there's something there and that it could be good for you, much better, in fact, than when all these additives came about.
Mm. So talk to me a bit about the history of tempeh and how it relates to the Javanese culture back in Indonesia.
Yeah, so the thing about Southeast Asian cultures is that we write stuff on palm leaves.
That perished, was it?
Yeah, so, but the earliest surviving record, I think, was in the Serat Sentini, which is a Javanese manuscript on the way of life. I think it was compiled in the 1700s, if I'm not mistaken. And in it, they detailed tempeh, basically. It's written in traditional Javanese script called Aksara Jawa. And yeah, so I think it detailed a prince traveling from a certain region to another region with carrying tempeh. And I think that was the first time, or not the first time it was mentioned, but surviving record of it.
Mm.
The interesting thing is that, you know, Java has a very long and rich history and contact with India, and the empires there were once Hindu and Buddhist, and obviously there is a very large vegetarian community there at that time. So tempeh was a form of protein that they could have without, you know, harming animals. And the history of that is that the thing about Singapore, for my family, we're a little city of immigrants, right? So my great grandparents came from Java. They moved over to Singapore. The interesting thing is that in Singapore, there was this little kampong called Kampong Tempeh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is where currently Bukit Timah is, which is a bit more central.
Ah, so Kampong Tempeh doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't exist anymore. It's now a fancy area. So it lives on in memory.
Right.
But that's not where my great-grandparents were from. But yet, this culture of eating tempeh continues till today, basically.
Mm. Wow, that's really cool. I didn't know there was so much history just to do with tempeh.
Yeah, right? Yeah, of course, yeah.
And this this historical document that you said that was about this prince bringing tempeh across when he was traveling, did it include a recipe for tempeh in there? Or?
No, there is no recipe. I think a lot of this is... tempeh exists as a cottage industry in Indonesia. So even today, you have like villages in the outskirts. There'll be like one person making tempeh for the entire village, and I think that's just been passed down.
Mm. And does the taste of tempeh vary between village to village? Like you know how, I guess, comparing it to sourdoughs. You know how people when they make sourdough, they say like, oh, the bacteria that they have in there for their sourdough mother is from Scandinavia or from some random place in the US, and it imparts like a different flavor to it. Is that the same for tempeh as well?
It's the same for tempeh, very much so. But I think it's more dependent on the variety of the soybeans that you use. Mm. In Java alone, there are some native soybean varieties, which we can't get in Singapore, so I can't make them.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, in general, if you were to get three different brands of tempeh from three different makers, it would taste different. In fact, even right now, when I make tempeh in different batches, sometimes the taste varies slightly. Not massively, but there is enough to detect the difference.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay, we'll get to tasting your tempeh in a bit. but we're just going to take a quick break. I've been speaking to Azmin Saini from Tempeh Culture, a tempeh company in Singapore that's looking to share the wonders of this fermented food. When we return, we'll taste some tempeh and talk about all the ways tempeh is used in our cuisine. Stay tuned. You're listening to Breaking Bread on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Breaking Bread, the show where we talk tempeh. I'm Jun, and I've been speaking to Azmin Saini from Tempeh Culture. We've just been talking about how tempeh is made and how tempeh culture came about. But now we are going to find out more about his tempeh. So you brought one tempeh with you.
Yep.
From Singapore. It's been how many days?
It's been 3 days.
3 days?
Yep.
Is it still edible?
It's still edible. Tempeh lasts 5 days in the fridge.
Right.
But you can freeze it for about 2 months or so.
Ah, okay.
This one has been traveling with me, hand carried. So it's not entirely refrigerated. But yeah.
Okay, we shall check it out.
Yep, here we go.
Oh, I love the packaging though. Because you say you don't use plastic, right?
No, I don't.
So this is all paper, hand wrapped. Mm.
So even if you take a look at the back, I've given a nod to my Javanese heritage with the script in Aksara Jawa.
Oh, so cool.
But that basically just means budaya tempeh.
Right.
Yep.
Ah. Oh, you know, you missed out a pun for the name. You could have called it Tiny Tempeh.
I've gotten that one many, many times.
Okay, so what should good tempeh look like?
Good fresh tempeh, like fresh on the day that you buy it, should look white with a little hint of soybeans around it. After a couple of days, it kind of shrinks a little bit because the moisture evaporates.
Mm-hmm.
But it should have the smell of mushrooms and a slightly sour fermented fragrance.
Mm, I'm giving a smell right now. And you're right about the mushroom aroma.
Yeah.
I think... Is it because of the time? Because usually when I get fresh tempeh from the wet market, say, it usually doesn't have much of that umami, mushroomy taste, smell to it.
It depends on where you get your tempeh from. A lot of makers, they would pasteurize their tempeh. That's when it stops becoming a living product. Because, you know, each time you ferment, you're creating life. You're nurturing life, and that's what makes it so delicate.
Mm.
But I don't pasteurize mine, and a lot of my customers don't really want it pasteurized. They want that fresh taste.
Mm.
So the interesting thing about tempeh is that once it's made, and even if it's wrapped, it generates its own heat and moisture.
Mm-hmm.
So it loses its moisture because it just keeps producing that moisture, and it keeps breaking down the soybeans.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Do you think I should taste some?
You can try. You can try some.
Okay, I'll taste some.
I would recommend you cook it, like maybe when you're home.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I have a strong stomach anyway, so. I've never tasted tempeh raw before.
It's a little bit dry. Oh, but the taste is still there. The nuttiness, the slight umami, a little bit of bitter.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. You're right about that umami, huh?
Yeah.
Mm.
So when I taste it, I can tell that this has been aged for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So does that make it stronger, more intense, the flavor?
It makes the flavors more intense, especially because the moisture evaporates. So the flavors get a little bit more concentrated.
Very nice. But this one doesn't have the like the fuzzy mold that you usually see on a lot of the ones wrapped in banana leaves, I think.
Yeah, it's still there. That's why it's white. Mm. So it's just that I've compressed it so it doesn't become fuzzy.
Okay.
It forms a dense patty.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I also saw on your website that you actually have some recipes on tempeh you make online. What kinds of things do you have on there?
Well, right now I've got, let's say, very easy ones from tempeh chips where you just brine it and deep fry it. Sorry, that's tempeh fries. I've got tempeh satay.
Mm.
And I'm also working through some collaborations. For instance, I've got a recipe done by Dewakan's chef. Dewakan is in the...
Oh, Darren Gill?
Yes. Right. So he's a good friend of mine.
Oh, cool.
And he's helped me come up with a recipe for a sandwich, basically, where tempeh is used as a meat substitute.
Mm-hmm.
So that's coming up. What else have I got? I've got very easy ways to prep tempeh because a lot of my buyers are people who do yoga and are really into clean eating.
Mm.
So one good workaround is that you can just, you know, make the tempeh into cubes, grill it, scatter it over your salad. So there's a very simple recipe for that up as well. So there'll be a couple of things I'll be releasing, things like curries, different ways to grill it, a different satay recipe, but yeah.
Mm. What's your take on the sensitive topic? But what's your take on the recent movement for a lot of these plant-based diets, right? And do you yourself prefer the more traditional ways of cooking tempeh, or like you said, you know, using it as a meat substitute in like burgers, salad, pita breads?
Okay, there are two questions there, right? One is what I think about the meat-based substitutes.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually visited these plants as part of my work as a food journalist. I've been to California, to Redwood City, to have a look at how impossible meats are made.
Mm.
I have nothing but admiration for them and what they do. It's a good mission and they're doing good things for the planet, right?
Mm.
And that's the sort of a bit of my mission as well.
Mm-hmm.
Although my mission is really more about promoting and talking about tempeh as a viable plant-based protein rather than something that, you know, comes out of a lab.
Mm.
But as to my take on whether I prefer traditional or like new recipes,
mm-hmm.
I prefer the traditional recipes because, you know, tempeh has been eaten for generations. These recipes have been refined for generations.
That's very true. Yeah.
Yeah. So something as simple as sambal tempeh or just even cutting up into slices. Like I have a tempeh fries recipe where I basically cook it the same way in a traditional way, but serve it in a new setting, right? So tempeh is often brined and then it's deep fried. So I thought to myself, why not cut it up to the shape of French fries and serve it with a dip?
Mm.
So
how did that go?
It went really well. I mean, I think brining your tempeh and then deep frying it is the easiest way to cook something, right? Anyone with a stove can do it.
Mm.
But yeah, so it really is about finding both, like catering to both types of diners, basically.
Mm. Going back to the topic of, I guess, the more plant-based diets, right? Have you heard of this US company, Tofurky?
Yes.
They do, or they, at least I think they started off with selling tempehs, right? And I saw they have this smoked maple bacon tempeh.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
have you tasted that before?
I haven't tasted it. It sounds amazing. It's not currently available in Singapore as far as I know.
Mm.
But yeah, it's an amazing idea. And the guy's been doing it for quite a while now.
Yeah,
It was 2 decades or so. Mm. And he's one of the first movers when it comes to making tempeh.
Mm. Do you see your business heading to that direction as well?
I think yes. In the long term, a lot of my customers would ask me, how do I cook it? Which is also why I have a recipe section.
Mm.
In the long term, yes, I would like to produce flavored tempeh, whether it's in the form of fermenting something with garlic granules and chili or marinating something and selling it as a product that's frozen or refrigerated remains to be seen. But in general, I also need to make it a lot more convenient for my buyers.
Right.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, like if they make a tempeh infused with certain flavors, right? How do you usually go about doing that? Do you ferment the tempeh first and then try and mix it in, or
so
the fermentation goes together?
Or? Yeah, so there are two different ways. One is to ferment tempeh as per normal. You know, you make your usual tempeh, the soybean patty and all that, and then you ferment it. And then you flavor, you marinate it with whatever you want to marinate it with. But there's also another technique where you can ferment it with the flavors that you want. So for instance, I have tried using chili flakes with garlic. That's taken off quite well. Mm. You know, I could just take it out, deep fry it, and it's ready to eat. Mm. But that's a little bit tricky. It's a little bit tricky because then the fermentation times would vary. The tempeh mole reacts differently to different substances. So for instance, with chili, it takes a little bit longer. I don't think anyone has actually fermented tempeh with chili flakes within part of the soybean cake. Mm. But yeah, I realized that it did take a little longer. So cool. It really depends.
Oh, yeah. Seems like there's so many different avenues to be explored, right, with tempeh.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh,
for sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
So just to end, where can people find your tempeh and maybe order them even?
Yeah. So right now we have an online form. We're still quite small. We make our tempeh in batches. Making tempeh itself is a very laborious process. Whether I make 3 or whether I make 300, the process is the same. And it takes roughly, you know, plus or minus the same amount of time because, you know, you're fermenting and all that. So we make ours in batches and it's available through pickups. So basically people can contact me, order, I would set a collection date and then, yeah.
But this is only in Singapore, right?
This is only in Singapore for now.
Are you planning on expanding to Malaysia soon?
Yes, that would be nice. But it also depends on how I do within the next 1 or 2 years. And then we'll see.
Cool. Yeah. Well, all the best with your business.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jun.
That's all we have for this week's show. To listen to more episodes, find us on iTunes, Spotify, or visit our website www.bfm.my. And if you're hungry for more funky recipes and food writing, visit junandtonic.com. That's JunandTonic. I'm Jun, and you've been listening to Breaking Bread on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.